Hello, everyone. I'm Rochelle Carey in for Femi Oki. The UN Climate Change Conference, COP26, is coming to a close. India, the world's third biggest carbon emitter, has made some surprisingly bold energy pledges. But how feasible are they? Join our discussion about India and climate change on YouTube, and you too could be in the stream. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi created a lot of buzz at COP26 this month by announcing some huge environmental pledges. They include a promise to pivot toward green energy by 2030 and achieve net zero emissions by 2070. The move comes as India struggles with several climate-related crises. The southern city of Chennai is underwater from an unusually torrential monsoon season, and thousands of people have had to leave their homes. And in the north, the Yamuna River in New Delhi is coated with toxic foam from industrial waste runoff. Meanwhile, the air quality in the capital is so bad that many schools closed this week. India knows it has to tackle climate change, but it's also the world's second most populous country, and its energy needs are growing. So leaders must figure out a way to fuel the booming economy while balancing environmental concerns. Joining us to discuss India's climate change pledge is Kabir Agarwal, journalist for The Wire, an independent Indian news site. Kabir is in Glasgow at the COP26 conference, and from London, Ritu Bhardwaj, senior researcher for the International Institute for Environment and Development. And finally, Vaibhav Chaturvedi, an economist for the Council on Energy, Environment and Water, who is also in Glasgow at COP26. Welcome to all of you. I have a similar question basically to start this off with all of you. Kabir, how has this been received there, this news?
Well, first, as you said, I think there was surprise that this was announced. The net zero target, because just a few days before the Prime Minister's announcement, India's Ministry for Climate Change was actually saying that we are not going to be announcing a net zero year. So there was surprise. It was welcomed mostly that India has finally announced the net zero target, which has been sort of in discussion since the beginning, at least the beginning of this year. And so India has announced that. So that brought, in a sense, an end to that chapter of the debate, because John Kerry and the developed world had been pushing India to announce a net zero target. So in many senses, it brought a sense of closure to that debate, whether India is going to announce a net zero target or not. Then there is the broader question of how that is going to be achieved, what a net zero pathway is going to look like. Mm-hmm. Which is something that we can discuss.
Absolutely, we will discuss this. That's a very good point, Ritu. How would you characterize how this has been received? Were you personally surprised by this?
Honestly, I was not surprised, because there was a lot of discussion happening anyways around net zero, and we work very closely with the Ministry of Environment and Forest, and it seemed like some big bang, some news was going to be announced, but. Honestly, if you look at the renewable energy and energy efficiency target, which is what I'm more interested in, that seems like a really bold target. And for me, I would really welcome that. But there's some aspect of climate targets which were not announced or which were not highlighted. For example, India's target around forestry or carbon sinks, or even any target or any talk around adaptation or loss and damage, that's something which was not announced. And we were expecting some announcement or some mention of those issues at that platform.
Vaibhav, were you surprised? What was your reaction to this?
Well, yes, I think many of us were surprised, but we were very pleasantly surprised. But let me say, well, there was a big clue in the meeting that the Prime Minister chaired earlier. The conclusion of the meeting was that India would not be an outlier. And that was a pretty big clue, and I knew about it. So yes, there was a surprise, because the net zero thing was not sort of officially declared, as Kabir also said. But having said that, you know, the industry is reacting actually very positively to it. It is ultimately an economic transformation agenda, it's an industry that has to put a lot of money on the table. And there was a lot of uncertainty earlier. All the uncertainty, as Kabir has also said, now goes away. So the agenda is very clear that it has to be, you know, net zero in 2070. And now investors have to move in that direction. So it's been a great development from that sense.
Kabir, what is the headline to you? I mean, there's these five major points, but what to you is the biggest headline out of this announcement?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that 2030, the announcements, the targets which have been announced to be met by 2030, those are the real issues that we should be looking at, and those are the real targets, because as the IPCC has also said that we need to move in the direction of reducing emissions now. So in the next decade, it's the next decade which is crucial. So more than the net zero target, which is 50 years away, which requires a larger, broader transformation, which the 2030 targets will feed into. So it's really the 2030 targets, I feel, that are really, really crucial, and we need to focus heavily on that. It will require a massive, massive effort to meet those targets. India has shown in the past as well, with the first set of commitments that it made, that it has the capacity to meet its targets with respect to climate change. It has almost met two of its targets with respect to the Paris agreements. So it has shown the way in that sense. It has done better than most countries party to the Paris Agreement on meeting its Paris Agreement commitments. So that is what I think we should focus on in the next decade with that. And that's what we could talk about as well.
Okay, so Ritu, this, you know, India getting half of its energy from renewables by 2030, is that feasible to you?
Absolutely. See, it's feasible, but it's very aspirational. It's also very ambitious. For example, you know, all the projections say that India's, by 2030, India's overall generation capacity would be somewhere around 800 gigawatts. When we're saying 500 gigawatts, it means like we would almost be meeting two-thirds of that renewable energy targets the electricity demands from renewable, which is almost like tripling the existing production through renewable energy sources. And in many sense, if you look at those four targets, other than the net zero, they're actually 2x2. So if you achieve the one renewable energy target, you achieve the second. And similarly, if you meet the energy efficiency, your energy intensity target, you meet the emission reduction goals. So, you know, in many sense, as Kabir was also mentioning, energy efficiency targets are almost on track, you know, because of the Perform Achieve and Trade scheme, you know, most of the industries are almost in line with that commitment. But the problem is on the energy efficiency or energy intensity target, the problem is many industries have almost reached a level of plateau. So they've plateaued in terms of their performance. They need technology, they need finance to access the best available international technology. Uh-huh. But also, you know, we need to increasingly now focus our attention from the big industry, the large industries, which have been the focus of energy efficiency, and take that focus also to the small and medium enterprises, which will be the difficult
okay.
side.
I wanted to share a comment from one of our viewers. See, this comment here says, I agree that the promises up to 2020 that they need to be met, but this viewer says capacity isn't the problem. Political will is the key. Vaibhav, you've been privy to some meetings with government officials. Is the political will there to get this done?
It is. And in fact, if you look at many of the big bang reforms that this particular government has undertaken, in fact, it is always said in India that all the earlier governments that they were not able to achieve in the last like 40, 50 years, this government managed to achieve in like 5 years, in the earlier term also and this term also. So they are bold. And the leadership is very strong. There's no doubt about it. It's very visibly there. But let me also, you know, give this disclaimer here. We are now not dealing with a big program of electrification of all the houses or providing LPG for all the houses or connecting all the houses with taps. This is a very different thing because you're talking about, you know, massive distribution sector reforms. So now you need to deal with, complicated things like labor unions. And it is much more complicated than, you know, just providing electricity access, which is just about an infrastructure development agenda. And you could do it a lot more easily as compared to dealing with or engaging with, you know, fighting with India's labor unions. Because net zero is essentially an economic transformation agenda. And many of the sort of distortions in the Indian market, especially in the energy market, both on the demand and the supply side, those distortions have to be, you know, dealt away with. And this needs, this means a very different kind of political economy has to emerge. Mm-hmm. And the current political economy, the government will need to, you know, deal with it. And that is probably the biggest challenge for the transition.
And you talk about labor unions, we're talking about people. I mean, this is not some abstract thing we're talking about, this having to, this fundamental change in the way that a country operates. And there's people that are being affected by the, by what is happening with climate change. I want to play something from a gentleman who's come, whose background is from a farming family, who talks about what some of the adaptive measures are that we need to address this.
India is already in a climate emergency, and we face extreme weather events, cyclones, coastal erosions, floods, water crisis, and impacts on agriculture and whoever dependent on nature is very much severe. India should completely move away from fossil fuels if we are any means to address climate crisis, and there is no way out of that. And also, India should ramp up its mitigation, resilience, and adaptations to ensure climate justice, to protect its people, and to ensure forests are protected and also indigenous communities are protected. At the same time, targets as such, net zeros, are providing further loopholes to continue to emit more and exacerbating the situation of a climate crisis.
And unfortunately, pictures like what you see here, we see them over and over and over again. There are families who will build and then rebuild, and then their homes are destroyed again. They continue to get displaced. So as John Paul said, we're in the climate emergency right now. And he talks about the justice aspect of that. So, Ritu, what is being done to help people that continue to get pounded and pounded by climate change while the bigger steps are trying to be made to mitigate it?
That's exactly what I was saying. You know, we, when we saw Narendra Modi's speech, he didn't talk about adaptation targets. Mm-hmm. He didn't talk about loss and damage. And that's exactly what this gentleman was saying. The climate impacts are there, and there are some impacts which are already locked in, and that's causing losses and damage. People are not able to adapt with them anymore. And, you know, we recently compiled some case studies, and irrespective of what kind of climate impacts people are facing, whether it's flood, drought, cyclone, one thing is common. People are getting displaced. They are forced to migrate. And right now, we do not have any ways in which we are able to support these migrant communities. We saw a similar situation when we had COVID crisis in India, when we saw sea of people going back or reverse migration happening. We didn't have any means of supporting them. And we recently did a research where we saw that when people are forced to migrate, when they're displaced from their homes, they are exposed to other vulnerabilities. There are secondary and tertiary impacts to that. For example, they're exposed to trafficking. They are vulnerable to slavery because, you know, they have no social safety nets. India, you know, while I'm saying that, India also has one of the world's largest social protection program in the form of Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme. It's popularly known as MREX. Now, this program has huge potential for creating climate resilience. In fact, they have some climate resilience instruments within them as well. But somehow, you know, we've been trying to, you know, influence government decisions as to how they can make these investments more climate resilient, whether they can create portability of some of these entitlements that are there in these schemes so that when people migrate or they're forced to get displaced, they're covered by these social safety.
So let me bring, let me bring Kabir into this. I want to read another comment from Maditsa, I hope I'm saying that right. I'm watching on YouTube. Maditsa says that India is lying. It's all lies. They will not abide by their promises. Kabir, I'm curious. I mean, what Ritu was saying, there are millions and millions of people that this affects. You have to take care of them. You have to get them to buy in for this to actually work. Has that been part of the conversation? Are people trustful of the promises that Modi and the government are making?
Yeah, no, unfortunately, the answer to that question is no. And this is where I slightly disagree with Vaibhav as well, that we've seen in this government, we've seen a political will to make grand announcements, but they've all not always been followed up. India has met its commitments under the Paris Agreement, but that's an exception. In almost all domestic policies, the performance of this government has not been something to write home about. So there is a political will to make grand announcements, but the follow-up remains weak. We'll have to wait and see how that happens. And there is very little talk about how the transition and how people will be For instance, there are 4 million people who are directly or indirectly employed in the coal sector. So how those people, if India has to move away from coal, how those people will be rehabilitated into other sectors?
Kabir, actually, one of our viewers had that exact question. Our YouTube viewer says, how will India wean the poor off of coal without hurting them?
So I think a good example of how to look at this is how India has dealt with the farmer protests, which have been going on for the last 1 year now. Essentially, the farmers are protesting because it is also a transition issue, because they have to move away from growing rice, which is water intensive, due to climate change and due to other factors as well, not only climate change. But the government has just refused to engage with them, refused to provide any kind of assistance in that transition that they are supposed to make. So that is, it's instructive of how India is going to deal with this problem. So far, it's not done well.
All right. Vaibhaj, you are the economist on the panel. So I actually want to play something from another economist talking about investing in renewables. Let's go ahead and listen to guys at SOT 14. 15, pardon me.
After a few years of reluctance, finally, Prime Minister Modi, on November 1st, promised to cut India's emissions to net zero by 2070 at the Glasgow COP summit. It is indeed a positive step from a developing economy's perspective, which has set huge ambitions for its economic growth. Now, this growth can be profitable and sustainable at the same time, which is something which these targets can ensure. However, India would need tech transfer and, more importantly, financial support in order to achieve these targets.
Okay, financial support. That's obviously something that's like, this is great, but where's the money coming from? And Vaibhaj, India has said that the rest of the world needs to pony up about $1 trillion to make this happen. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, I mean, Vibhuti makes an excellent point, first of all. As I said, I want to emphasize that this is net zero is an economic transformation agenda. In fact, my colleagues on the panel are also, I mean, I do have some difference of opinion because this announcement has just been made, right? So what do we expect to happen, you know, post-announcement? Now, in a year or two, we will expect India to submit a more detailed kind of long-term strategy, which will have many of the plans that people are saying that, you know, it's missing. Obviously, once an announcement is made, if you don't expect in a week, the detailed plan is also kind of presented. So the plan is in preparation. And let's wait for it. It will be presented. A very important part of the plan is definitely finance, right? So the UN process is important, but we must also know that UN process will be very slow always to deliver, right? The question is, can we get finance? And finance is, you know, not just about these big investment numbers that you see. A lot of these big investments will come from the Indian banking sector, right? So we are talking about, well, that additional sort of low-cost finance that may be, let's say, a Norwegian pension fund that invests in so many places, right? If climate is an important agenda, then they must be investing in emerging economy, which is where the growth is, which is where the renewable energy is expected to grow. And they don't need to just, you know, we are not talking about grants. We are talking about, small, like low-cost finance. That is absolutely critical.
Okay, Vaibhaj, Ritu wants to get in here.
Yes, you know, I would just want to, you know, Vaibhav, I understand when you say that an announcement has been made and then a plan would follow. I think it should be the other way around. There should have been consultation, there should have been a plan made, and then an announcement should have been made. Because when this announcement was made, I thought, where is the roadmap for achieving it? And we work very closely with the industry sector.
If you show me any country, where this has happened, actually. See, the reality is...
Absolutely. Sorry to interrupt you,
Ritu, but let me say, this government already has. See,
the research has already been done.
See, research has been done,
I'll just complete what I'm trying to say. You know, see, India is, you know, these commitments, especially energy intensity commitment, have been made based on the success of PAT program. And we worked so closely with the industry on that. When the first PAT cycle was announced, there was a massive consultation with the industry. A plan was made, the targets were discussed with them. Only then the PAT first cycle was announced. And then there was also a commitment that a market-based mechanism would be established. When the second, third, fourth cycle came, there was absolutely no consultation with the industry, especially the new industries which were given target. They had absolutely no clue as to how they're going to achieve it. how this... So the point is, you can keep announcing targets, but unless you take everybody on board, discuss, consult with them, because otherwise it will just remain target. It will not get achieved. So that's why this skepticism that...
Okay, let Vaibhav respond to that.
Yeah, see, that's an interesting point. But my first point is, well, there is a lot of research that government, I mean, we have all been supporting the government, right? So we have given all the numbers, what it takes. In fact, the paper is already out in open in terms of sectoral strategies, CW paper. And also, it's not that the government has randomly made an announcement. Let's be very clear about it, right? Otherwise, it could have done a 2050 net zero, you know. We have understood and assessed the feasibility, you know. And yes, India is a pretty big country. You are right. Once a detailed plan needs to be made, in terms of the presentation to, let's say, under the United Nations, right? So the understanding is there. But whenever that plan is made, those consultations will happen. We must know this. And on the, you know, any country, look at any country, you know, look at EU, look at US, everybody has made an announcement. In fact, let me ask you this, you know, to my fellow panelists, how many of us believe here that if the government of India started going on consultation asking what should be India's net zero year, what do you think India's civil society and industry would have said? They would have said like 2100, 2300. Let's be real about it, right? It's the government which has taken bold step, and it's the role of the government to actually give these very strong policy signals. And then,
okay, so quickly, Ritu, because I do want to wrap up with Kabir, but go ahead.
No, I'll completely disagree with that approach. You know, no program has succeeded unless you take all the stakeholders on board. And I would disagree that if civil society and industry would have been taken on board, they would have, you know, the PAT cycle, the PAT program succeeded because in the first cycle because industry was consulted.
So let me, Kabir, let me ask you something. I know you know that in the U.S., climate change is an extremely politicized issue, and the policy changes depending on who the president is, just like President Trump rolled back a lot of promises that Barack Obama had made. How politicized is this issue in India? Narendra Modi's not going to be prime minister forever. Are these goals that will be carried forward?
But so far, it's not really a very political issue. In India, for most people, air pollution is a bigger issue than climate change is in terms of perception. So yeah, in that sense, it's not a major political issue, but it probably will become a major political issue as we see more and more impacts every year, and almost everyone in the country will be impacted. So it may become a major political issue. So yeah, that is a major problem. But again, one of the things that I think we've missed discussing here is also, and which is related to what Weber said about finance, that it is imperative that the developed countries deliver on finance at COP26. They haven't delivered yet on their commitments on the Paris Agreement. And it's vital for countries, developing countries, including India. India finds itself in a very complicated situation. It is a G20 country. It also has the largest number of poor people in the country. In the world.
And it takes energy to lift them out of poverty.
Exactly. So India has to grow. In India's economy, I mean, the per capita income in certain parts of India is lower than almost every part of the world. So India has to continue to grow. That is its prime objective. We have to lift people out of poverty. We have to ensure that nobody in India is food insecure. That should be, because the basics are not being met. So that is something that we have to meet first. And that is something that the world should not lose sight of, and which is why it's crucial to deliver on finance.
Yes.
All right. Kabir, we're about out of time. Vaibhav, I'll let you add to that if you'd like.
Well, I think I completely agree with Kabir. And also, you know, finance is absolutely critical, as I think all of us are on the same page with that. Also on the stakeholder, I think I completely agree with Ritu. No disagreement at all with that. The question is all about how many stakeholders, what kind of stakeholders, and for what purpose, right? So the moment, the next step is actually getting into sectoral strategies. And that is really where the role of, you know, all the stakeholders come from all the sectors. And, you know, but I don't think it should be, I mean, stakeholder consultation already happened even pre-net zero.
All right. Have to be the final word, though. Thank you, Kabir Agarwal, Ritu Parwaj, and Vaibhav Charchavetti. Thank you all so much for talking about this really important topic. We'll continue to follow it. Climate change is a very important issue and will continue to be. And that's it for our show today. Thanks for your time. Join us next time.